With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Sports cards is a lifestyle. Sports cards and we live now.
Jeremy Lee in the building and every guest that you ever needed. Sports cards after hours keep the hobby heated. Updates, hobby talk like you never seen it. Sports cards live and none could ever beat it.
Sports cards is a lifestyle. Sports cards and we live now.
Welcome to another episode of Sports Cards Live with your host, Jeremy Lee.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. This is episode number 112 of Sports Cards Live. It is Tuesday night, August the 31st, 2021. And as always, my name is Jeremy Lee. Before we do get to tonight's show, I do want to thank last Saturday's guests, Gene McLeod of Arena Designs and Shay Rahman, also known as Shay Wave Vlogs. What a great night we had. Thanks everybody for joining. Later tonight on After Hours, we will welcome Aaron Rich. He's the writer and the director of the new hobby docuseries, Hobby Dawns. Excited to have Aaron on later tonight, so stick around for that. Next Saturday's guests are Reed Kaseoka from, he's the lead buyer at Dave and Adam's Card World. And we also have Wade Boggs Super Collector, also known as Wade Boggs Fan, I believe, on YouTube, John Reichard. I want to shout out my guys, the Big Three Hockey on Instagram. Great supporters of the channel. Give them a follow. Check out the fine singles they exhibit on IG. I want to shout out again the Summit Show. If you guys haven't heard, the Summit Show is happening September 18th and 19th in Edmonton, Alberta. Usually has over 100 vendors, about 2,000 attendees. Who knows how many this time with the way the hobby is. If you're in the area, be sure to come on down. I will be there and I cannot wait. I want to shout out the podcast listeners. As always, really appreciate all you guys. And of course, all the subscribers and watchers. We are now past 3,600 subscribers. Can't thank you enough for the viewership, support, and encouragement. It's really overwhelming and means a lot to me. So thank you very much. As always, night guys, comments, questions are in play. Let's get to tonight's guest. He started creating art at the age of four, got a start in the hobby in 1989, chasing Ken Griffey Jr. rookie cards, the upper deck card. His favorite teams are the Mets, Giants, Rangers, and Knicks. Favorite athletes, Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Tyson. Originally from and still hailing from Brooklyn, New York, let's bring him out, Card Killer. Welcome to Sports Cards Live. How are you doing tonight?
What's up, Jeremy? It's an honor and pleasure to be with you tonight. I would not know any place I'd rather be than right here.
I love it, man. It's an honor and a privilege to have you. I mean, you and I, we actually go back, believe it or not. I know you through Instagram, more or less. But at the first virtual expo that took place back in June of 2020, I had a virtual booth and you came by, you hung out with me in there for a few hours, if I remember correctly, and wasn't sure who you were. I knew you were a Card Killer, and I was actually pretty flattered to have you bless my booth with your presence, because your Instagram presence had been really just really awesome. So let's get into you a little bit. Tell us. Let's get into your hobby origin before we get into Card Killer, the persona. Tell us about your hobby origin story.
No doubt. Everything started in 89. And I was 11 years old. I just started playing Little League with my friends. We all got together. Like, the entire neighborhood kind of did this Little League in the neighborhood. And, you know, it kind of got us into like the card scene and everything. I mean, it was there in the late 80s, but, you know, obviously the 89 Upper Decks, you know, set and Griffey himself, it kind of exploded that late 80s boom and then led into the 90s. So we were playing baseball. You know, if we weren't playing baseball, we're playing wiffle ball. you know, whatever baseball we can get our hands on. And then at night we were trading cards, and on the weekends we were going to shows. And, you know, everybody gets the bug, you know, and we had that for years and years and years. I collected Griffey, like everybody got to choose one PC player, to mainly collect. This way we don't step on each other's toes. And then if I pull another player from a pack, I'd be able to trade him his player for my Griffeys and stuff like that. And it sucked because the Griffeys were more expensive than the other players at the time. So I usually had to wheel and deal to get my Griffeys. But yeah, the card shows were so much fun. You know, I have so many memories of collecting when I was a kid. And, you know, like kind of ebbs and flows that everybody goes through. You know, you shut it down kind of in your late teens, other priorities take over. You get back into it through nostalgia in your mid to late 20s. I was the same way. I got back into it in 2008. And I started collecting the cards again. And I noticed that the technology was so much better than the early 90s. I mean, I appreciate all the foil stuff. And I remember seeing some holograms and stuff like that. But, you know, there was never any, you know, they never really had the serious like refractor parallels and the stuff that, you know, started developing in the early 2000s. And certainly no superfractors and stuff like that. So, you know, that fascinated me, that, and I got really, you know, back into it for a few years again. Had a couple of bad beats, a couple of good ones. Still collected Griffey, but, you know, it was different because he was, you know, 2008, he was like on his way out. He was retiring at the time and he was on the Reds, and it was just a little bit of a different situation for him. I got a few cards, but that's when things started. It started working into the art. Like, because it's just, I kind of incorporate the things that I love the most into my art. And, so I would say about 2015, and I was on and off dabbling in the card scene. And, I just started cutting up the cards because they were just sitting in a shoebox. You know, the common ones, like I was, you know, buying boxes and boxes in 2008, 2009, 2010. And there's so many refractors just left over, just sitting in a box. And I wanted to start working it into my art. And I slowly did over time, around 2014, 2015. The painting you see behind me, it was made in 2015. So that's all a bunch of refractor pieces. Like, I love doing this to give you the effect so you could see how this works. But how it kind of moves on you, like the colors. I don't know if you get a glimpse of that.
So yeah, we can see. Beautiful.
So yeah. So that effect, you know, I was like, I was hooked on it. I was hooked on it because it's almost like watching my favorite painting, like as if it was in a dream, as if I was dreaming about it, you know? So I kept that going, and I just kept the collecting going a little bit on the side. And then the art started taking over, and it led me to the process of the sports cards and and sports art in general, just being, kind of like this, because I started asking myself certain questions that artists kind of need to ask themselves at some point in their process. And that's, what do you want to see as an artist? What do you want to do? Like, you're not appeasing just your audience, you're appeasing yourself. So what appeases you? And so, like, the answer was me. It's like, what appeases me is like nostalgic stuff. And cards is sitting there at number one. You know, there's movies that I love from the 80s and the 90s that kind of weave them in and out of my art too. And video games, which was huge back then too. So they just all started coming together, and I started realizing, you know, this may not be a fine art arena, but how do I get it there? How do I change people's minds about like this not being, you know, sports art not being a novelty and not being just something that artists just go to because there's an audience? I was like, there's gotta be something more. So I use these cards to figure that out. And so it's sort of like the collecting turns into the passion. The passion kind of mixes in, and you end up where I am now, which is some crazy nut job wearing a goddamn mask. So
okay,
that's what it is.
Yeah. No, I love the story and the backstory for sure. And I want to get into next really the story about Card Killer, you're the persona, Card Killer himself, who's different than the person behind the mask. So I want to get into that. Let's just say hi. We got a few people with us tonight. So welcome everybody back to this special evening of Sports Cards Live. And I'll explain why we're doing it on a Tuesday. The reason is really quite simple, everybody. Card Killer and I, we met at the National. We hung out. We furthered our friendship. And we decided, you know, he's going to come on the show at some point. And I got back from the National and I had two kind of groups of future guests. I had the ones who gave me business cards and the ones who I made a list of and kept in my phone. And I started with the business cards and I got filled up, like we're booked Saturdays right through till the end of October. And it kind of meant that I was going to have to wait that long to bring this fine gentleman on the show. And we started talking just a few days ago and we said, you know what, let's get you on, but I don't want to wait till November. Let's just do it. Let's do it on, how about Tuesday? And so here we are. And then we were able to also bring on Aaron Rich, who's going to join us later on tonight for the late show and talk about his project Hobby Don. So that's why we're here on a Tuesday night. So thanks everybody for joining. Ian Undercover saw Card Killer on Christina's Corner and it was very interesting. No doubt. Tyler, just discovered you, Card Killer, and he's been stuck on your Instagram for the last 40 minutes.
Yeah, take your time.
Optimus Volt's in the house. Someone else that I got to meet at the National, one of your good card art buddies, if that's right.
That's my brother right there. We hung out almost every single day at the National.
We have Michael Hamm in the house, says met you and, oh, sorry, I got ahead of myself there. Met you and... Might actually have seen you. So we'll keep the secret. Currency Project, great to have you. These guys do great art, card art as well. I have a card right behind me there somewhere that they've done. Ian Undercover, Starry Night is my favorite painting. Amazing. Yeah, that's a beautiful piece behind you there. Triple V, Baseball Card Vandals is a fantastic sports card parody artist too. Are you familiar with Baseball Card Vandals?
Absolutely. They've been around forever and they post so much stuff. They just make, you know, they just take cards up and they take like a pen and they just make funny. They alter the names and make funny names out of it or little parody sketches all over their faces. Hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm familiar with the account now that you remind me. Uh-huh. Donovan, talk Card Killer Tuesday. Love it. Jay Kappel in the house. Donovan, much love from Donnie B. Oh, that's Donnie B.
Yep. That's Donnie B, baby.
He's on the transit as we speak. Where does he live, Donnie B? What city is he in?
He's in San Francisco.
San Fran. We got San Fran in the house, Donnie. Great to see you. Daniel A, my man. Welcome to the show. Craig Booge in the house. Good evening. Need a Card Killer, Mac Jones. So, Mr. Card Killer, if I may call you that, let's now talk about the origin of Card Killer, the masked artist, and let's understand, because you almost got there when we were talking about your hobby history, the origin story. You started getting to the art. When did this Card Killer persona come about, and what was sort of the inspiration for that?
Okay, so we got to rewind to January of 2019, and it was just a very simple idea of what I was doing in 2018. It kind of worked for that year. But as things kind of go on, if they get a little stale for me, I kind of move on and I try something new. I'm always trying to make something that's fresh and that's going to hit. So if it hits, it's fine. And if it fades out, then it wasn't meant to be. So there was just one occurrence one day to show the people in the hobby that what exactly my process was with the cards that I was cutting up. And I knew as a card collector that it is rather uncomfortable to actually cut up a card, especially if it has value or if there's potential for, you know, for it to go up in value over a certain period of time. But I wasn't really cutting up valuable cards because obviously, you know, you can't tell what cards are in there. If there's a $1,000 card or a $2 card or a 5-cent card. So I started cutting up these cards and I was just like, let me take a 15-second clip of me cutting up one of these ones that have a bit of scarcity to it. And then I just started an Instagram page for it just to get a reaction, just to see exactly what the visceral feeling is from the audience. like who was washing. And within a few weeks, people were just like, what are you doing? What's going on? Stop doing it. Please, please stop doing it. And I was like, okay, so I'm getting a crazy reaction that people are freaking out. So why don't I just make this, like after a couple of weeks of this, I was like, why don't I just make this a little bit more fun? Instead of just sitting there chopping up cards and then, you know, putting villainous music or Halloween theme music or something behind it. Let's see, you know, how far I could push that. So like, you know, I started dabbling in, I think the, one of the first one was I just took a paper bag, like a hollow paper bag. I put a card inside and I dropped a little little bucket in it. And I pretended it was the scene in Silence of the Lambs where, you know, it puts the lotion on the skin again. So it was a card inside that had lotion in its hand. The player had lotion in his hand. And I, you know, I used the audio from the movie to reenact that scene. And people just, some people just started loving it because they just, you know, they thought it was funny. So once that started happening, you know, everything starts firing off in your head and going like, oh my God. So now if that was funny and that was very simple and that took me 15 minutes to do, what if I dedicate myself and make something that takes a half hour to do? Or what if I just start fully reenacting these scenes out of horror movies and replacing them with sports cards and just say the killer is loose or whatever, and then show these scenes. And everything is a progression and everything felt funny because it was always fresh. And it was every 2 weeks I had something new, a new direction, a new way of showing things, a new way of presenting the entertainment. So it was sort of like the masked man who didn't show his face at all. I didn't even have the mask at the time. And that was something over the next few months that I had to figure out, because if I wanted to get into my own kind of, people call me the Dexter of the hobby, like the, you know, the villain that you love to hate or hate to love. And it progressed pretty quickly, you know, for me doing parodies of movies like Jaws and The Shining and Goodfellas. Actually, the Goodfellas scene where Tom Brady, I replaced Tom Brady with the guy who was in the meat truck, frozen in the meat truck. And it's funny, I have that card now. I still have that card because actually I gave it away and then I bought it back. So this card is still in my possession now. That's the one of the original cards that I cut up. And granted, you don't see any like fine art in there, but this represents the card that was in the skit of one of the first parodies. And, you know, I still do the gold leaf. That's when I was doing that from the front, from the start, and, you know, putting the one of one gold in there too. So this one is like kind of like a see-through card. But and then from there, I was like, let me just start putting people on an arc, a story arc of who I am and what I really am. Because if people hated what I was doing, I was getting to the point where I was like, well, I don't want people to hate me because I, you know, I've got a lot more to show, because, you know, stuff like, you know, stuff what you see like this. And how am I going to get people to love this if they hate me? So that's when, you know, I just made it start making some of skits that are funny and entertaining to watch, and then started injecting art very little by little. So by June of 2019 is when the art started coming into the cards. And Donnie B, who's been with me almost basically since week number two, since February of 2019, kind of saw all this progressing. And he like kind of owns one of the first pieces that were just considered, at the time there was no term for card art. They didn't really say card art. Obviously sketch cards and artists who are painting on cards have been around forever. But this kind of brand of art was kind of not being explored, at least, you know, chopping up cards and kind of remaking them into something. And that went from mid-year 2019 to the end of the year. And I had worked with this guy, HT Twin Breaks, and he did high-end hot packs. And he inserted my art cards into his hot packs. And once those sold and I started selling things, then people started noticing, because once you sell, people start going, oh my God, there may be something here. So that's where the journey kind of started, with the art. And now it's kind of full on art. I mean, I still try to make entertaining content, but I can't just be this crazy ass villain now because you guys know too much. So it's like, I gotta like keep evolving. I gotta keep working. I gotta keep figuring out new things and new ways to approach it, because that's the only way that it keeps me interested. Otherwise I'd just be like, I get frustrated. I get bored very easily. So the Car Killer started that way. And it's been a few iterations in the past couple of years, you know, from doing charity events to running other pages that feature card art so we can build this subgenre, and so that we can all kind of rise together. I mean, that's all my front page is saying, we rise together. And I truly believe that with all the guys that have been involved with this, especially right here, Currency Project. What's up, guys? And Jay Capel, greater, fantastic, multi-talented artist, incredible. And Donnie B as well, making awesome card art and a huge ambassador for the scene. And many other examples. Optimus, obviously. Me and him are the only two guys who wear masks. So we recently did that collab, and we sold that card at National, me and him together. And that was the first collab I ever did. And like, I couldn't hold on to it for a day without selling it, because it was me and Optimus together. Like, come on, 1-2 punch.
Well, it's pretty cool that you're able to sell the card. We're going to get into some more of that very shortly. But let's just say hello to One of One Memorabilia Card says hello to both of us. So hello there. Fire loves the integrated art piece. Good evening, Fire Sports Cards. Of course, we got all your buddies are in here. So welcome to all of them. Ruben, no worries. That is not what this is all about. Welcome to the show. And this is probably Abdul at the Currency Project. Love the Jaws skit. I want the NFT version. Now, the Jaws skit was something that I watched over and over again when it first came out, because I was just trying to figure out what is this about? What's this guy about? And if you haven't seen it yet, there's the Jaws. If anyone out there watching hasn't seen the Jaws skit, you have to go to Card Killer's Instagram page and watch it along with everything else really that's on there, because it's some pretty, pretty interesting stuff. I thought it was pretty cool. Let's talk about the Ken Griffey Jr. Challenge, the Griffey Challenge. This was something that you started not that long ago, a couple of years ago, and I'll let you just take care of it. Explain what the Griffey Challenge is and where it's at now.
So we're going back to April 2019. So this is when I wasn't showing anything but either performance art or those little skits and everything. And this was the first kind of punch I wanted to pull. Like, it was definitely a statement, because it the 89 Upper Deck card to me was always my favorite card of all time. Always will be. We all know there's a stigma attached to it with population, that it was grossly overproduced. No one really knows the real numbers. So what can I do about that? And being the personality that I was and the guy who was supposed to be the villain, I can kind of hide the fact that there was such a really huge meaning behind it in an act that looks so like, you know, terrible for the hobby, but it was completely meant to be the opposite. And the Griffey Challenge was me burning the card, kind of an effigy, just kind of trying to prove a point that, you know, if I knock the population down one and someone starts a conversation about doing that, I mean, it was just, I wanted to build the legacy of the card and the legacy of the player. He was my favorite player of all time. And he is for a lot of people, especially for kids in the 90s. And this was a statement that I wanted to make when I started building the audience, for the audience to see that it wasn't just like this chaotic, you know, destruction. You know, there was actually a point to it. And I challenged other people to do it. Now, I was like, don't mess up your nines and tens, PSA 9 or 10s or anything like that. I was like, you know, take something that maybe like when you were a kid or that you came across for 10, 20 bucks that had a crease in it that, you know, it's not going to go crazy. To just creatively find a way to take care of the card, you know, take care of it, to destroy the card. And And this way you can spread the word that way, because your content, obviously, if it's very entertaining, is going to go through the internet and people are going to talk about it. So I did this in efforts to, like I said, build a legacy. It didn't work because no one really wanted to destroy any of their Griffies, like regardless, because I know there's, you know, the icon image and everything, and that's fine and everything. I mean, I didn't push it that much because if it didn't work, I was going to move on. And it kind of morphed itself because I started a page called the Griffey Legacy Project on Instagram, and me and Donnie B, because me and him, ride or die, baby. He agrees with me that, you know, if you want to start like a page like that, then we could dedicate that page to the art surrounding Ken Griffey Jr. So that includes the Griffey Challenge, but not limited to. So it opens the book to basically feature other card artists that were doing Griffey cards at the time. And yeah, I could throw in a post every once in a while saying, you know, do the Griffey Challenge, but the Griffey Challenge turned into people taking the 89 upper deck, maybe a lower grade one, and then cutting that up and making pieces of art out of it. Like the one of one pieces of art that you see, even right back here, I have one from, I could actually pull it out. Let me see. This one I just recently got, God bless, from Blender Zombie.
Oh, that's nice.
So, you know, he does his signature background to this one, and I'm in love. And he, you know, obviously took a graded one, and it's more of a, it's just an altered one. So that remains true. And so this is an example of someone taking that card and reducing the population, but then also adding you know, something that never existed with the 89 upper deck, which is a one of one. You know, it's not one of a million anymore. So, right. So why not? You know, that makes sense to me. And yeah, we could have a 1,000 one of ones, but for every one that we knock down, we build the legacy up, because now you can have like an art gallery of that one card and we can all celebrate it. And that's what I was trying to build. And it morphs over time, like I said, but it's gotten to this point where there's so many people that, really, really believe in the subgenre that it's gotten to the point where it's so much fun to watch. It's so much fun to watch. Jeremy, there's like, I go on Instagram and I see 20 new card art pieces a day, and that's conservatively. So that means I see 100 pieces of art a week, like just going through my feed, and I'm blown away. And I understand it because I'm like, I've been an advocate for it for years. And but yeah, that's basically where the beginning and where the Griffey thing has taken off, and it's gotten to the Legacy Project, which is the continuation of the challenge, if you will. You know, it's just taken on a life of its own.
Cool, man. Interesting stuff. I'm sure there's some people out there that would think it's sort of sacrilege to destroy a card, whether it's a one or a 10. Mm-hmm. And then there's other people who say, who cares? There's who knows how many hundreds of thousands of these things that were produced. So is it really, you know, does it really matter? And then there's the people who love it and think it's awesome because you're creating art out of these cards versus just simply burning them as an example. But so that's pretty, have you had any sort of negativity come your way where like anyone's really upset that you destroyed a card? Has what's the worst you've had come your way
in terms of reaction? Yeah. The thing is that my attitude towards that is to always turn a negative into a positive. So if someone comes at me with a negative comment, if it's really ignorant and it doesn't make much sense, I don't really pay too much attention to it. If they're really upset about it, I'll leave a comment back challenging, you know, what they're saying to me. And half the time they're just like, okay, well, you know what? I just don't agree. Some of the times they're like, okay, well, I kind of understand it a little bit more. And then now I've checked out your page and I understand it a lot more. In the beginning, it was a little rough, but I knew I was going to get that because that's how I presented myself. I mean, I'm about taking my art on a story. So in the beginning, it was always, I knew it was going to be tough, But the thing was, the challenge was, is to get everybody to accept it, to understand it, and then celebrate it.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not trying to bring the negatives in, but it's that I know you get so much positive. So that I just wanted to understand if you have received that, if you've been subject to anybody kind of coming at you from that perspective.
Yeah. So, no, it did happen. It did happen, but it didn't happen a lot. But when it did, I didn't look at it as a negativity thing. I looked at it as a challenge. And there was one guy in particular, and this guy, his handle was ChrisG613. He looked at my stuff, and he was at first, I know he was taken back, and he was like, this, you're not doing the right thing, blah, blah, blah. And it, but the thing was, like I said, I took it as a challenge. Now, over the course of the next couple of months, he was basically challenging me to do it to more expensive cards, because he was like, oh, you got this big attitude about you. Why don't you do something a little bit more serious? And I was like, okay, well, I took that in. And I was like, you know what? He's probably goddamn right. You know what? He's right. Because if I want to, you know, stir the pot, I'm not going to stir the pot with a $2 card. I'm going to stir the pot with a $100 card. And it made sense at the time, because then it's like, you know, I'm building that persona and everything. So I listened to him, and I started, that's when I did the Banksy parody, where, you know, this, it was like a $75 card I pulled out of a box when I went to a show. It was a Sony Michel Blue Refractor Auto Rookie. And it was a nice card. And so I took it, and I knew the value of it was pretty high, and I was debating it, but I was like, I have a really great idea for it. So as the auction went off, the Michelle dropped through the frame and chopped up, just like the Banksy did at the auction, where, you know, that big controversy was, which that guy's a genius. And that's not me, believe me, I'm not him. So that one, then all of a sudden he was like, yeah, that's exactly what I mean. And then me and him started DMing back and forth, Fast forward to now, and he's a really, really close friend of mine. And I've seen him a few times, and we've hung out, and we were at the National, and his daughter loves what I do. And we're really, really close friends, because I was like, you weren't trolling me, you were challenging me. So that's a good example of exactly how I dealt with stuff like that. And even at the National, check this out, I got this from him when we hung out and had breakfast, and his daughter drew this for me. Nice. And this is my favorite pickup at the National from this year. That's so cool. Shout out to Lily, and what's up, Chris? Love you.
So here, I want to bring this up. Jordan Hudson says you should video yourself doing your card art. There'd be so many people to tune in to watch that. I'm sure you've thought of that. That'd be pretty cool. And Ice Wolf here, who must be a card artist himself, says once you get started, it becomes addictive. And you know, I'm sure it is. You get to express yourself. I mean, that's what people love to do. So, okay, let's keep on talking about some of these things that you've done. You also did what you called in 2019 the anti-national. Can you I asked you about this because I remember seeing you like basically drill through a pack of cards with a drill. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what that was?
So so this was mid 2019 when the National was taking place, and I wasn't attending, and I also wasn't anywhere near revealing who I was or close to that, but it was still the nature of let's see how I can get a reaction from people. And the idea was to take unopened packs, maybe not like high-end packs, but Chrome, Topps Chrome, you can still get incredibly high-end cards out of that, you know, if it's like, you know, a one of a kind, or if it's a low pop auto. So I created this little board and it said the anti-nationals, and I just did a live with six packs, and I was like, all right, four of them are going to go, four of them are going to get a hole through them, and then two of them are going to survive. So I drilled through them and I opened them. It was just very, very basic and raw, because I didn't flesh out any of, like, you know, how complex it is today. But that's what I call a mayhem break now. And what it is just wreaking havoc by putting like a power drill through a pack that's unopened. So it's like roulette. It's like playing a game of roulette. and then seeing what comes out on the other side is kind of like the morbid curiosity of the audience. So it was just kind of toying with the emotions of the people watching. And like, you know, out of the six packs, four of them, you know, no one really big came out of them, but the auto kit was in the one that got saved. So I didn't even destroy the auto because it by luck got through. But if you wanted to see, I actually kept one of those cards. So I have an Anthony Rizzo. This is a Mayhem. This is like one of the first Mayhem cards I ever made. So you see the hole right in the middle there by his elbow, and you could see it easily on the back there.
Yeah.
So, and then, obviously everything I do from the beginning involved that gold leafing process. So the card killer is on that side. And then the one of one is below the Topps Chrome. And then you see the Anti-Nationals in gold 2019 there. So that's a really, really early example of what the Mayhem breaks have become. Now that's a whole nother can of worms with the Mayhem breaks, because it's definitely evolved since then. Yeah.
Well, okay. So let's now talk about at the National. Mm-hmm. I saw a card that you had created, and I don't believe, like, this is a card that took you time to make, and I featured it on the thumbnail for this video for our show tonight. It's the 1961 Fleer Wilt Chamberlain. Right. So you actually took an actual 61 Fleer Wilt Chamberlain and you turned it into a piece of card killer card art.
Yeah.
I mean, talk a bit about that, because, you know, at first glance, people will be like, wow, how could you do that to a 61 Fleer Wilt Chamberlain? That's a Mount Rushmore card. That's a major, major piece of sports and hobby history. So there's more to the story. So let's talk a bit about that. And then I'm curious to know, like, cause this card actually sold at the National, and let's talk about that. And like, if you're willing to divulge what it actually sold for, and if that was like a record for that you're aware of for card art sales.
Sure. Sure. In the beginning, I started, as the cards that I was quote unquote altering got more and more expensive, it really started with the Luka Doncic rated rookie that I turned into a one of one card art piece, and I used it in an auction to raise money for a charity. So that card sold for over $1,000, and that's like the first example of from what I know, as you know, the card art that we know today selling for that much. And that kind of got the ball rolling for me to know that I can take a $100 card, alter it, and then, you know, use it for good. And then I could take I could probably take a $1,000 card and do the same thing. Yet it is uncharted waters. So it hadn't been really stretched to that point until a friend of mine, who's a good friend of mine now, Matt Jerry, whose IG handle is sports.collector. He came up to me and he saw what I was doing, and he proposed that he's got this set of 61 Fleer basketball that he would love to have me take my hand to. Now, the situation there is not like he's handing me like a PSA 8 Wilt Chamberlain card. You know, what he was doing is that he had a friend who as a child collected them and then put them in a scrapbook. But in order to do that, he chopped the edges off. So he cut the borders off all four edges. And basically, it's the altering job of the century. So you can't really do anything with the card afterwards because it's altered to the point where it's not even worth grading, because people are going to kind of go like, yeah, like I'm going to do that. But the card otherwise is in beautiful condition. You know, it's clear pictures. It's been in a book for 50 years. There's no creases, there's no smudges, everything is really nice. So he was like, can you do something to them? And I was like, you bet your ass I could do something to them. And so over the course of like a 6 month period, he gave me five cards. He gave me the Oscar Robertson, he gave me the Bill Russell, he gave me Elgin Baylor, Bill West, And then he gave me the Wilt. So I waited the last to do the Wilt so I can have a learning curve to figure out what was the best approach for the Wilt. But I already had a lot of techniques in place. So that all the cards are very, very similar. It's just that they all have a different feel to them, which is kind of the point I wanted to make. My work is very mosaic in nature, but they all have a different attitude about it. And, you know, even the Elgin Baylor, I actually titled Halos for Elgin because he had just passed while I was making the card. So you could actually see that in the card, there's patterns of swirls that represent halos. And on the back, there's a very, very, very obvious one. So there's a theme to that one. And then I just went to town on the Wilt. Like, I spent double time on the Wilt, just putting small little accents in it. And you know, where the other ones were maybe a 20 to 25 hour process, this one was like over 40 easily, because I just wanted to, you know, represent, you know, I needed to come correct with that card. And I presented it at the National to Matt Jerry. He had his booth. And he was obviously happy with it because I gave him the West and the Wilt at the same time. He had the Oscar and the Elgin, so all four kind of reunited. The Bill Russell sold the story. The story behind the Bill Russell has to do with Donnie B, because Donnie B posted it 2 months before National, and then 2 days later someone came through with an offer that we just couldn't refuse. It was like the Godfather, and we just couldn't say no. And we decided to be like, okay, so the first one's out without even really having it a time to sit and brew. And the price of that ended up being for what card art is a record, as far as I know, and as far as I think the people that are involved in this subgenre kind of know that, like, that was a precedent. So you can't say no when someone's offering you money in for a piece of card art that has never been reached before. How do you say no to that? So we agreed to a sale for that, and that was fine. And then the Wilt broke that record at National, selling for $2,500. So, you know, basically taking a card that you could probably get $100 for, just because someone was like, oh, okay, at least, you know, it is the actual card, even though they can't do anything with it as far as grading is concerned, to turn it into something that, you know, that has an added value to and an added story to, was just, it's part of like the goal of my career and the goal of me being an artist, to do something like that. And setting that precedent is good for the entire subgenre, because then it lifts everybody up and everybody goes, oh my God, now look at the price of this. And that was card art that I thought was just people just, you know, cutting up cards and just having fun with them. There's actually a serious side to that. And there's a bunch of us in the mix with that. So we got to lift each other up. And, you know, as soon as someone else sells and breaks my record, I'm going to celebrate that. And I'm, you know, that's, you know, a goal for me too, to see it just blow the hell up. So
yeah,
to do that at the National was great, because you were there and you got to watch it, and, you know, people were gathering around and those camera crews like kind of taping it and everything. And it was a little overwhelming, but it was just, it was such a moment, and it was the right place at the right time with the right card, the right dealer. Cheers, Matt Jerry. Once again, shout out Matt Jerry. It was just a real moment at the National, and I, you know, I'll never forget it.
Yeah. When you told me that the cards sold, first of all, they were beautiful cards. And then next thing I know, I saw you. You're like, yeah, it sold for how much? $2,500. I'm like, wow, like that's a lot for. It seems like a lot for a card art, but you put over 40 hours into it. It's actually not that much if you look at what it is. It's an authentic Wilt Chamberlain card, regardless of the fact that the borders were chopped off by the guy when he was a kid. It's really a cool story how you almost resurrected and. This card from the ashes into being not only valuable but beautiful and different. So really, really, really cool stuff. Let's give a shout out here to Zed420. Welcome to the show, Zed. Says card art baby. Ching Su Vang, what's up, KK and Jeremy? Hey, you are welcome for talking card art. It's It's always fun to kind of step outside the boundaries and bring a guy like this guy onto the show right here, for sure. Raymond says that makes it even better. No card is safe. That's with the drilling through the cards. We got Pittsburgh in the house. Good evening, Anthony. Welcome, welcome. And I'm not sure who this is, but they say Card Killer is a mad scientist, noir genius. He's tapped into this strange combination of shock, horror, passion, and artistry. Cool. Hey, well said. That's like a professional review right there that you'd see on a website or something like that, featuring your art.
I appreciate that, even though it's an anonymous person, though.
I'm trying to see if I can see who it is, but it's not working for me for some reason. So.
Regardless, I appreciate that, man. It means a lot because it's just been something I've been trying to do for my entire life.
Show us one of your hats that you've made, because you also do hat art, just to get an idea of how flashy these things are. Like, that's just pretty.
So I had a couple of hats that I brought to the National, including this Jets hat. I was trying to get it to Gary V. I wanted to just grab his attention to see what he thought about, or if he knew even about what card art was about. But I was doing this a couple of years ago, right before I was cutting up the cards on video. So this is obviously made all out of refractor pieces. And this is kind of my, like, this is more or less my original art concepts, you know, these swirls and everything like that. And they flow throughout the hat. And I like sending people on that, like, roller coaster ride. And there's my little logo in there. Oh, yeah. On the side here. And I had a Jets hat as well, who now is adorned by Brody the Kid. So I appreciate him accepting that gift. And so this is the only hat I have in stock. I have three left. I have three that I have to do on commission. So I'm backed up getting those hats done. Those hats take a hell of a long time and a hell of a lot of the right cards too, because, like, you know, you see the green is actually pretty easy to come by, because in the backgrounds of baseball players and football players, the grass is always green. So I can find green a lot, but in, like, the, you know, in a Giants hat, you know, finding blue is a little harder. Finding red, finding gold is really hard, because the gold is usually reserved for the rarer cards. And the chrome is very easy. The chrome silver is everywhere. So that's easy to find. But you know, it takes a lot of time and effort, because I got to go to card shows and I got to hunt, and then I got to spend money on that. And sometimes they're like, yeah, I want them two for a dollar, and I need like 100 of them. So it's like the materials get pricey. So the hats get pricey. And also it's also over 40 hours of work. It's also over a full week's work, you know, full time. And yeah. I do other things, dude. Like, I do this nights and weekends. So it you know, it takes time, especially when people are, it's in demand and it builds up like that. So yeah, that's the hat situation. But I did hats before I did the card art, because that was part of the evolution. It was just there. Yeah.
No, it's the hat looks super, super cool. Like, that's a museum piece kind of thing. Okay. We know Charles Smith made the comment. Good evening, Charles. Skeppy in the house. Good evening, Skeppy. Donnie B reminds us about the Bill Russell, which we did touch on, but yeah, that's super cool. Super cool. Okay. So we touched on it before in terms of, you know, the way you guys got to support each other. I forget the saying you said, like, we rise together. What I want to know is card art, is it a legitimate hobby movement? And/or, because it could be both, or is it an art movement? And where do you see most of your response and accolades coming from? Is it coming from card collectors or art enthusiasts?
So art enthusiasts do appreciate it, but it's very, very few and far between. The movement is residing in the hobby now, but it's not limited to it. I foresee it as an art movement as well. You know, like when Topps hired all the artists to do Project 2020 and Project 70, they understood the proposal and they took their art that they were doing on the outside in the art world and they brought it into the card art world because it's so accessibly easy to do so. it's a movement in my opinion, because there were very few artists doing it before Topps kind of introduced that. And now there are hundreds, I would say at least 100 that I can think of people doing it. And this is all within a very quick period of time. It kind of defines what a movement does. A movement goes into this birth stage, or this underground stage, comes up, gets real popular, gets exhausted, and then goes away before it comes back. And I kind of see like the arc of it right now, kind of like we're not at the precipice of it. We're still kind of like rising, especially the guys who make the one of ones, or the girls who make the one of ones by hand. You know, that's kind of like the scene that I'm talking about, because then I can go to an art gallery saying, look how big this is. Even though it's a little small piece, if I have, a couple of dozen of these, you can actually present it as real art. And knowing the scene, it seems like that's at least a promising progression, but it definitely is a hobby thing right now. My agent signed me based on the fact that I was making card art, and she's from the art world. So she thought it was edgy. She thought it was exciting. So, as we get out of the pandemic, she's going to advocate for me in the art world. And that's, yet to be seen, but like, if she believes in me, why not others in the art world? Because she was a part of it. Right. It's just, the pandemic kind of slowed things down. So that's just why, I've basically been in the lab myself, advocating it for myself, and obviously praising and supporting the subgenre as it rises, because it wouldn't rise if it wasn't for everybody doing it. And everybody loving it and supporting it, and especially this community, this card art community, is absolutely so supportive and incredibly generous and positive that I don't even want to look at the art world right now, because I'm looking at the card art world.
Well, you're such a great sort of like spokesperson for the whole genre, and the fact that it is, that you do have an agent who wants to take it into the art world. Jake says right here, it's already spread into regular society. I do commissions for people outside the hobby. So, that's really indicative of where this thing is going, could be going. I kind of feel like having you on the show tonight, this, even though you've been doing this for a couple of years, some of these guys have been doing it for more than one or two or three years. It's kind of neat to think that we still just might be at the birth of this, overall. We are talking about what inning the hobby is in. Well, what inning is card art in? We might still be in the pregame warmups here, which is encouraging for all you guys and gals, which is just really, really cool. So it's kind of neat to have you on right now. Maybe in 10 or 20 years, we'll look back on this episode and see where things are at that time. Who knows? Only time will tell. But the fact that, so now you've got an agent, she wants to take you out into the art world. And then it causes me to talk about the card killer persona, who is different than the man beneath the mask. And it brings me to the mask itself, the disguise, if you will. And, I got to wonder, and I kind of teased it on the, Instagram and Twitter, talking about having you on tonight, was like, would you ever take off the mask and reveal your identity to the community? And if you would, like, how do you prepare for that? How would you prepare for that emotionally and even strategically as an artist with a product and an identity? Where are you at with that?
Well, there's so many factors that come into play, especially now as things move on. In the beginning, it was so that I can get on camera and visually show the mayhem that was going on, and not just have it be my hands cutting the cards and everything, like doing something a little bit more elaborate, like taking that chainsaw to a box of Tops. I needed my body to be in the shot so you can see me, but the only way I was going to be able to do it was to cover my face. The actual first, let's see if I have it. I have it here. The first iteration mask, the one I've been using for a very long time, is just adorned in all these RPA patches that I have torn to pieces and basically glued them on to a luchador mask. This thing is pretty rancid right now. So I don't really like using it, but yeah, these are all patches from cards and everything. So I thought that was kind of a fun way to represent, you know, how I was going to show myself. But there was also that little kind of Banksy kind of way of presenting myself, that the mystery is actually part of the art and part of the story arc. So it needs to go somewhere and always needed to go somewhere. But when you see this, you kind of see the same thing. You kind of see you see the person who's basically showing you the art, who has no rules, who, you know, doesn't apologize for anything. And that art, that's the edgy part of the art, is fine. But, you know, the person behind the mask has to suffer all the consequences for it. And he lives in the real world where, you know, most people think you're insane for doing something like this. And it becomes the idea behind the mask, as it goes further and further, kind of plays out like, hey, am I wearing this mask because I don't want people to know who I really am? And that's the exact opposite of what my art is about. So now I start, you know, the way that things have progressed is that, like, does the mask become a point of contention with me instead of me just trying to freak people out? And then I have to deal with personal issues, stuff like that. So now it's come to a point, especially at the National, because at the National, I can walk the floor. I walk the floor with this mask, and I knew that 99% of the people didn't know who I was at all. And I know that they were assuming that there is some crazy person on the, you know, walking the floor. Is he going to rob, you know, someone? Because, you know, obviously that's a possibility. Or is he like one of these new media guys who is just in it for the money, you know, and doesn't care about the hobby? So it wasn't like no one said that to me, but like that was the kind of things that are going through my head. Because I started having, like I said, doubts about what the mask meant. And when I was at the National, things started morphing into this duality, kind of like me wrestling with myself. And it became clear to me that, like, at certain points at the National, that I had to take the mask off a few times. And I had to do that out of respect, because I had to show the people that, you know, that knew who I was already and who cared about what I was doing, that I care about them too. And I need this off to show you, you know, exactly how I really feel, because this mask kind of feels like it dehumanizes my connection with these people in the hobby who mean everything to me. So yeah, this situation keeps popping up in my head. And there was a situation where I came to you, Jeremy, and I was like, you know, and I was not wearing the mask, and it was so that I could connect with you in like a real way. And, you know, you say, like, you know, I believe that your audience is who makes you too, right? Because my audience is who makes me. So, like, I feel like I want to show the same respect, like, even to your audience. So if you don't mind, I'll show you exactly what I mean. So I don't mind. So maybe this may be the moment, but.
Here it comes. Whoa, there he is.
So, yeah, I'm a normal person underneath this mask, and I'm a normal person to you now. Now you don't have to think like, oh, is he going to do something crazy and everything? Because I'm not a crazy person. I'm just an artist with a few different ideas. And that's what I wanted to show everybody at National. And that's when, you know, there was some strategic points where I took the mask off so that I can connect for real with people and make, and have that make sense to, as a part of my art too, you know, because everything is always a part of the process of my art. And especially at the table when I met, geez, I was at the table at National and I met Ken Carl, for God's sakes, Ken Carl was there at Tim Carroll's booth, and Greg Kreinler was there. There was Tom Paints, me and Optimus and Donnie B all just sitting there. We got a nice picture together. And it was just like, I can't wear the mask in front of these people because there's just, there's just too much extra weirdness behind it. Like, and I don't really feel it anymore. You know, like I'm kind of through with that attitude. And so, that's why, you know, tonight, like right now, I'm willing to show you guys that it's a lot more than what the mask is, you know? I just wanted to extend that respect to you and your audience, you know?
Well, you know, first of all, thank you. You know, you don't have to, but I thank you for it. I found myself, it was very emotional when you kind of put your head down and removed the mask. That was an emotional moment. I'm sure it was for you. It was for me. The audience is responding. And I think, you know, I think it's just very authentic. And I think you were there. This was the time for you to take off the mask, reveal yourself. And, you know, it's not, I had seen you without it before. Some other people had seen you without it before, but that was on a very kind of closed level. There weren't a lot of people around. And so, I don't know, congratulations on what you just did. I think it's a big moment for you. And I hope that it helps elevate what you're doing and sort of take you to the next level. Maybe it frees you up and allows you to you know, access a new level of creativity within you now that you've experienced that. How do you feel right now?
Well, it kind of feels like I don't have to hide anymore, because it started becoming a point of contention with me. It's like, am I going to be? I wanted to marry the two, because if I become a full-time artist, or when I become a full-time artist, it's not going to be because of the mask. It's going to be because of me. And I feel like I'm getting closer and closer to that as time goes on, especially right around now. So this was kind of like the right time for me to do something like this, and the right place. I mean, I commend you. Thank you so much for having me on, and for believing in my process and knowing how important this is to me. You know, I'm probably going to go freak out later tonight, but no one's ever really, you know, seen it besides National, and really, and the first reaction I got was like, was acceptance. And that helped a lot. That helped me kind of like, I got to get out of the shell, because this mask is now starting to choke me where it used to liberate me. So, I'll still wear it. I'll still wear it because it's fun and people know me, you know, when I wear it and what it means and everything. But now it means something supplemental, because now this is kind of what you're going to get. Not all the time, but some of the time. You know, if I do a mayhem break, I'd just love to wear the mask. And if you desperately need to see me not wear it, I will. I'll take it off, because I don't, you know, it doesn't matter like that much to me anymore, because I've moved on. And I did it here. So I appreciate you, Jeremy, for allowing that.
Oh, I'm honored that you chose to do this here on Sports Cards Live with me. It's you know, as some people have said, we're making history here. Let's take a moment to relax, gather your thoughts, your feelings. Can I call you by your real name right now?
Yeah, my name is Rodney.
Rodney. Take a minute and just sort of take it all in, because I know it's a big moment for you. You know, Jake says, never lose the mask. You know, show the face sometimes somewhere, but never lose the mask.
Yeah.
You know, the mask is you. And this is before, these comments came up before you took it off. But I think what this means is you can still use it. As you mentioned, it's not like it's history altogether. It can still be there. Dunkachino asked everyone to hit the big blue button. I think that's a like button. Thank you very much, Dunkachino. Currency Project says the mask allows for a layer of performance art. Ian Undercover says, Jeremy, making card history. Well, hobby history with Rodney, card killer. For sure, we got a boom from Junk Wax Packs. Let's hit the smash button. I was here. Let's get that one up there for Ian Undercover. Get that on the video. Yeah, Jordan says it has to be uncomfortable. Speak to that for a moment. Was it uncomfortable wearing the mask even walking around the National?
Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes I just needed it as a breather. When I took the mask off, no one really knew anyway. So if I just kind of went to a corner, just took it off, I was able to walk around and no one knew regardless. So that was fine. And yeah, you can't go more than like, let's say in an hour or so without it just kind of sweating through it. I mean, this one is latex, very like stretchy material. So this kind of is okay. The last one, this one was like wearing some kind of like, you know, crazy like gimp mask or something. It was just really, really uncomfortable at points. And it's stretched.
Sam says, history in the making right here. Donnie, history in the making. Optimus, hell yes. Chang Su says, finally, thanks for the reveal, KK. Zed gives us a heart. I'm thinking this might be Charles says, whoa, that was intense. This is strangely quite personal. I felt the same way. Thanks so much for sharing. The Card Killer shows his face for Sports Cards Live. Jordan says, that was cool as hell. It felt like the movies when you finally realize the bad guy and you're like, oh, hell nah. I didn't see that coming for sure. And then you realize that he's not a bad guy, like at all. You know, you're like you said, just a normal guy. Totally. Yeah, here we go. Looks like a guy in a hoodie with a passion for art. Donnie says, got nothing to hide, brother. We love you. Very nice. Very nice. Jordan says, it's all good, dude. We all love your cards. They are beautiful and amazing. No lie. I secretly thought you would be like the Hills Have Eyes movie. So glad I was wrong. Dead lucky to have been here. Yeah, for the people that were here live, I mean, that's a pretty cool moment in the history of the hobby. You know, Instagram community, you've got over 10,000 followers on Instagram. So lots of people know what you're up to, and they know that little purple icon is Card Killer. So let's talk. I want to just dive a little bit more into your national experience. You know, you met lots of people, went to some events, you know, but now that the mask is off tonight, the difference for you at the national between walking around with it and walking around without it, can you sort of succinctly describe that difference now that we've revealed?
Yeah. I had touched on it before when I was walking the floor with the mask on. Like I'm watching people as I go by, obviously, so I don't bump into people, but I noticed them kind of, you know, looking at me, kind of going, what, you know, what the hell is going on? Every once in a while you get stopped and people would say, Card Killer. And I would turn around and, you know, usually I would chat with them for a couple of minutes. And that's how, like, those people who know who I was kind of recognized me because I was going to wear the mask. They kind of knew that. So that was cool to connect with those people on that level. But all the other reactions were like, there's, you know, either there's a crazy person on the floor or he's just trying to show off, you know, without anything to back it, like, or something like that. Like, so like getting that vibe, you know, kind of, you know, set things in motion for me, you know, since the national. But when I went to trade night, the first, the Thursday night, I went to trade night with Blake Jameson and Beantown Hobby, who did a great job of organizing that night. And we hung out for a while and I got to meet, you know, Blake himself, along with Lauren Taylor and FDOT. And I walk in with the mask because I got to walk in like, you know, I want to walk in and people kind of know me that way. If I didn't walk in, they would not know that it was me. But I took it off during that night because I had to have that kind of one-on-one with the mask wasn't doing it, you know?
Right.
And then I had met so many great people at trade night, and we had chopped it up with so many cool people, including, you know, Peter Pac-Man went there with Slabby Sosa and another like cousin of his trail. And, you know, we were talking the whole night and it just felt comfortable because no one looked at it and thought, wow, that's crazy that he took it off. But they were just like, wow, now I can be normal in front of it. And so can I.
Yeah.
So it was important for me to do it that night. And everybody was quite respectable about it and actually connected with a lot more people, you know, with it off. And yeah. I was able to explain myself a little bit better without there being that dehumanizing barrier. So that's the difference right there, because when I wore the mask, people like think there's, you know, that shell. I mean, I'm giving them the shell. So what else do I expect back? But like, is that guy crazy? And then when I take it off with people that I know, then it's like, oh, I respect the work, but now I understand this guy now, and now I can relate to him a little bit more, and we can talk about stuff. Like I was only able to ask like really serious questions to these other artists with it off, because they weren't going to give me the honest answer if I didn't, you know?
Right. Right.
Because why would you, you know, because I could be, you know, nuts. So that's the way it worked. And it worked in my favor. And I realized that I was going to get the real answer if I was myself. So that was definitely a night and day difference of wearing the mask and not wearing the mask at National.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that insight. It's interesting. And, you know, talking about people knowing you, I would hope that you, you come across people moving forward, you direct them to this video right tonight that we're making right now, because you're being so open and raw about everything, both pre mask off and post. So I think there's a lot of great insight into Rodney the person, and an insight into the card killer persona as well. So let's do this now. You are an artist. I mean, you're not just a guy that makes card art. You actually are an artist. And there's a little it's a short video that you helped me find that was directed by Spike Lee, of all people. This is a Spike Lee joint. Do you mind if I share my screen and we play it? It's like a minute long, a minute and 10 seconds or so, I think. And,
sure. So I believe you have the trailer then.
Oh, is that okay? It must just be the trailer then. Okay, here, I'm going to share my screen for everybody. So let's do that right now. Here we go. This is the Spike Lee joint, the Republic of Brooklyn. And you scroll down and that's you right there. That's Rodney. And if I come down to watch the film, it should move us over to it. And let's just hit the play video. So maybe this is just the trailer, which I didn't realize there was a longer version of it.
Yeah, there's a 10-minute documentary.
Ah, well, that's too long. So perfect that we have the trailer.
Yeah.
So play. Let's get this thing playing for everybody. Rodney, there we go.
My name is Rodney Christensen. I'm an artist. I was born in Brooklyn, specifically in Diger Heights.
I knew I loved art when I was like 4 or 5 years old. The reason why I was into music and art is because I was always around it.
For me, art like has its veins, like in everything I do. Art is like my passion. Art is like my journey. Art is truth. Art is being honest.
I ask myself, what do I want my viewer to see, like, or experience? This experimentation thing is kind of like what excites me. It's basically why I do it, because I want to get to the point where it's like you're looking at a painting like as if you were dreaming about it.
Uber, what it does, it grants me clarity.
I think about paintings when I'm driving constantly. The driving gives me the focus, and that's when I try to like solve my problems, and it keeps me on the right track, and that's when the ideas come.
So Spike Lee did a project for Uber featuring about half a dozen or so artists, and made a film about each of them. And that is just the trailer. Then there is a longer one to go along with that.
Oh yeah. That's the tip of the iceberg, man. He gets a full 10 minutes and it's basically my life surrounding 2018 at the time. And you could see the paintings. Like this one right here is similar in a way, because I was sculpting metal and then I was painting on top of it. And then my next process was to put sports cards on top of that. I was just not that deep into that painting at the moment. And actually I was using the wrong paint because it wasn't my supplies, but that's another story. So that's a very, very short version of what they did. And it was pretty lengthy into my life at the moment. And you can see exactly how I'm not too far off, because I'm still about honesty and experimentation. It's just, you know, I've concentrated into something that, you know, I've kind of, you know, love developing and watching it grow.
Yeah. You're very consistent for sure. Another piece that we found is in Up Mag. So I'm going to share the screen again, just to let everybody see you were featured in this Up Mag. What's Up Mag very quickly?
Up Mag is a New York City street art magazine. They're about four magazines, like four editions deep. So they're fairly new, But you know, it's like they run a hard copy every other month, and then they kind of feature these articles online before they drop the mag. And so that one came out about a week ago, and it featured there's modern baseball art, Bill Cormalis, true OG. And we got there's a Project 70 card right there. That's Final Cut Design. That's a one of one Griffey made out of vinyl. So he cuts it with a razor blade and then he puts layers on it. So that guy's awesome. And I own that card, by the way.
Oh, that's wicked. It's beautiful. And then the guy who makes belts out of baseball cards, really neat. Yeah. So I just call your attention. I just call, you know, the audience's attention to this. If you want more information on kind of card art and how it's being picked up by the street mag, the street art mag, Up Mag, which I think the New York publication. So check that out. It's just upmag.com. It's called A Crease in the Cards, from collectibles to art. Really, really cool. Just want to draw everyone's attention to that. Now, oh,
there it is. Yeah,
that's really nice.
It's like a Jolly Rancher candy, bro. This is amazing work, man. I love this guy. Final Cut Design, shout out.
Really nice. Really nice. All right, we're going to run through a couple more comments here, Rodney. And then I want to shout out your podcast and your other Instagram accounts for people to follow. And then we're going to wrap up. But okay. This has been really, really awesome. As Zed says, feeling lucky to have been here. Tiger Jordan says, love the display case. I have a few just like that. Much respect to you and Jeremy. Matt Castello, the mask is off for sure. Yeah. Currency product, lots of love to you, Rodney. That took courage. Very nice. Very nice. Don's Field of Dreams says, didn't see that coming. Good for you. That's really cool. Really cool. So you are now, okay, so it's done. You've revealed yourself. You know, let's change topics now so we can kind of, you know, get back to just move on, put it in the past, because I know you'll be reflecting on this later tonight as you are reflecting on your day. But you're now working on a podcast. It's called Outside the Wax. You're doing it with Peter Pacman and Donnie B. Tell us a little bit about the podcast and why people should be listening to it.
I don't pretend to be this incredible analyst of the sports card industry or anything like that. I do feel like I have things to say. And since I've partnered up with Donnie B, we know that we chop it up together. And I can give you, there's like 2 years of DMs, me and him, almost every day back and forth, talking about what we're doing, talking about how we're going to deal with making our new pages and doing things like auctioning card art and building it. Years and years and years of it. And we discussed we should just really kind of give back to the community, like our process, and tell everybody how that worked and where it is today, why it's there. We never really pulled the trigger because I was like, oh, there's still some technical problems. You know, we don't really have any, we don't have studios. We don't have professional mics, you know, like, you know, once these things kind of come into play, then we'll talk about the podcast because we know we have the content. And then we met Peter Pacman, and then Peter Pacman comes in and bulldozes right through us both and goes, why don't we just start one today? And, you know, it took me about 5 seconds to realize that Peter Pacman was a genius when I heard his music. So I was like, absolutely, my friend, let's just, you know, what have we got to lose? And, you know, we're just doing this on an Anchor app on our phone. And we're just chopping it up because we know we have a lot to say, even though it's not about like ROI and it's not about the top five cards. It's about how we relate to the hobby and how we're approaching it. And I think it was worth people, you know, entertaining people, but also giving them something that other podcasts are not giving them. Because once you have that, then you have a podcast. So, we just did one episode and it's a phone conversation about how we're going to do the podcast. It's not even anything details, no segments. There's no like organization really. And it's just like three friends on a phone, like with the same passion. And it's so funny how raw it is, but it kind of works for us because people are like, it sounds like you could be the fourth person in that phone conversation, because you're also probably conversing to yourself about how you would interject yourself into that conversation, right?
Yeah.
Because the conversations are compelling, because Pete has so much to say and so does Donnie. And, you know, I offered my own opinion with almost just about anything that comes to mind. And then we do shout outs. And yeah, we started developing little segments, but they're still very, very raw and loose. We still laugh and we still pause. I say and you know, like an endless amount of times. Like I can't get rid of it. I just don't know how to do it. And like I counted when I edited, I'm like, I said, you know, like 35 times. I'm like, well, you gotta be kidding me. I was like, I have to edit, like it takes me an extra hour to edit the you knows out and I can't even get them all.
Tough, so, I'm sure.
But it's fun because we're talking about, you know, we do a current topic and, you know, we give our own perspective of it and, you know, see, there we go. You know, and then we move on to like, you know, what question can we ask each other? So we ask each other one question relating to the hobby and then we do shout outs, you know, and feature people in the hobby that we appreciate and respect. And it ends up being like an hour and a half each time we do it because we can't get enough of talking to each other, and it shows in the podcast, and it's still raw because we haven't even done a drop yet. I mean, we put Pete's music in the beginning and maybe Pete's music at the end sometimes like that. But other than that, it's just like the most raw version of a podcast that you can find. Like, and Donnie's like looking for sponsors. He wants sponsorships because he wants to get that like professional edge. And I'm like, that's fine and everything. But people are appreciating it now because it feels so like you're in the room with us. Like, yeah,
it's really authentic. I've listened to them and I enjoy them, especially when you feel like you know the guys, and I know all three of you. You know, two of you have been on the show now. I met Donnie too and got to hang out with him, you know, several different occasions sporadically throughout the national. So I love it. I enjoy it. It's just a nice, easy listen. And I recommend other people check it out. Raymond does say you haven't said at all in this segment, KK, and you know what, it's true. I haven't noticed it, and I didn't even pick up on the you knows until you just called yourself out for it. Yeah. Matt says it's a great pod for sure. It definitely is. Okay, we do need to wrap this up, Rodney, because I am doing another episode in about 6 minutes with Aaron Rich from the Hobby Dons new docuseries that just came out with the first episode a couple of days ago. So I don't want to be late for that, but I do want to end with this. I want to ask you any advice that you would give to upcoming and aspiring card artists. What can you give some nice succinct advice?
I can always say that this is something so inclusive. Even if you're an amateur, you can jump into this very, very easily. Take a look. Just go to Instagram, hashtag card art and stuff, and you'll see this wide spectrum of people who consider themselves amateur to people who are professional on varying levels. And don't be afraid to include your own style and your own way of things if you're a budding artist, if you're experienced and all that. There's always that level of refinement. There's always going to be obstacles. Like, I figure things out for myself. I'm always self-taught. And it's frustrating at times because I come across an obstacle and I may not be able to finish a card within months because I can't figure out the next step without screwing it up. And I screw up all the time. The only reason why you see clean cards now is because I've screwed up so many times. So believe me, you will screw up. If you want to DM me, I will walk you through it. But it's almost better that you like go through the trenches and screw up so you can figure it out how not to. And believe me, I've been doing it for a long ass time, and it is it's well worth the payoff. Just stick to your guns. If you screw up, you probably won't the next time, and then you learn, and then you just keep going. The advice is to not get discouraged about an obstacle. Work through it. I'll talk to you. You know, I'll walk you through it if I can. And stick at it, because there's always that level of refinement. 2 years ago, I was making cards that I would not be doing these days. And it's only been, because I've worked so much at it and refined it. And now everything's kind of much cleaner and more concise. And all you got to do is just keep doing it because your mind will get you there.
Yeah. Stay committed and push through. So, okay. Well, good advice. I just want to show a couple of card art pieces that I have. So this is the Currency Project, guys.
Yeah.
And this is a beautiful, beautiful piece. It's a LeBron James that I bought on eBay from their account, the CAD, I think it's called. So check out the Currency Project on Instagram. And then I also want to show this one that Donnie, actually I'm going to take it out of the case, that Donnie presented to me at the National. It's an MC Hammer Pro Set card.
And yeah,
it's 3D, awesome. Right? It's 3D.
It's like a shadow box if you put really it in a
one-time. Yeah, and of course it's signed one-on-one as well. So really, really neat stuff. And I will be looking forward to adding a card killer piece to my card art collection in due course for sure. So listen, we're gonna wrap up card killer Rodney. It's been a true privilege to have you on for your reveal. Really it's been awesome. I'm just so giddy about it, really. And so before we sign off, I just want to let everybody know, if you're new to Sports Cards Live, if Card Killer brought you here tonight, welcome to the channel. Please subscribe. Every Saturday night I come on with different guests and we do long form interviews. And and if you're new to Card Killer, make sure you are following him on Instagram at Card Killer. Also follow Sports Card Art Gallery. These are on the ticker right now, and the Griffey Legacy Project. Follow all of these accounts to stay on top of what he is up to in the card art genre within the hobby. Currency Project, we appreciate you guys greatly. Thank you very much. Ian Undercover, thanks. Great show. So check it out. And I will be coming back live, everybody, in about 4 minutes with Aaron Rich from Hobby Dons on the same channel under a different broadcast. Thank you, Donnie. Great to have you. Says hashtag we rise together. So that is the hashtag of the genre. Last word is yours, Rodney, and then we are done.
I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you actually engaging in part of what is, this is ultimately my process. And this was a big step, and I was so honored just to be here, to be able to do it with you. It means a lot, and it's only going to be going up from here. So like I say to everybody, man, we all rise together, man. And I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, it's really, the privilege is all mine. Thank you so much, everybody else. Hopefully we'll see you on After Hours shortly. If not, we'll see you next Saturday, or we will just see you in the hobby at shows and on Instagram. Thank you, everybody, for joining, and thank you to Card Killer Rodney. Awesome.
Good night, guys.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.